This is Tuesday night, January the 6th, 1981. Our first lesson for the new year. Truth for today. Tonight I would like to talk a little bit on the word Passover. There's quite a bit of questioning about it in these days. I don't know why the Passover has not been in force or been employed by the people to whom it was given for almost 1900 years, so it's rather a passé subject, if you want to say it that way. Hardly up to date, the Passover. Now, a good place to start, of course, is where it started. And that's right back in Exodus, the 12th chapter. Exodus, the 12th chapter. And we'll read a little of that and comment as we go and try to get plainly what this first Passover was and then how it was later observed and so on. Now, if anybody were to try to observe the Passover today, he would not go back to Exodus 12 for his observance of it, because that was on a special occasion, never was observed again like it was then. Now, there are several reasons why, and we'll get into that. And actually, the word Passover is not a real good translation of the word. It is a better translation, be Passover. And we'll have to find that in our context, too, where it says exactly that same thing. Well, chapter 12 of Exodus. And the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, This month shall be unto you the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year to you. Now, we'd have to go along in the context and find out what this month was. Well, it was called Abib, also Nisan. We probably know it better by the name Nisan than we do Abib. Now, that had not, up to this time, been the first month of the year for Israel. They had a New Year day in the fall. But there is a little system here begun, which goes on through the scriptures and gives us a pattern and probably gives us some idea of the working, the outworkings of the plans of God. Now, in keeping the Passover, it had to do with days. Now, the Passover was on the 14th of Nisan, and that is 2 times 7, 14. You find that they were given also the Sabbath later on. Sabbath never given up while they were here in Egypt. They didn't know anything about a Sabbath yet. Moses hadn't had the inspiration to write the book of Genesis concerning the beginning of the Sabbath. So Sabbath was not known as far as we know. There were 7 days. The seventh was to be a Sabbath. And then they had 7 weeks from the Passover to Pentecost. That was 49 days, and the 50th day was the Jubilee. I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. 7 weeks from Passover to Pentecost. For 7 weeks, Pentecost would be really coming on the 50th day. And that's where you get the word Pentecost, 50. Now, we have a 7 times 7 years. And that comes up to 50 years, and that is a Jubilee. So you can see that the Passover to Pentecost was a picture of the going on to Jubilee. Then there was another period of years, a 7 times 10, or 10 times 7 years. Like, for instance, the Babylonian captivity. actually, the Sabbath there was not the captivity so much as it was the desolations. The land had her Sabbaths, which Israel had not kept for the land, because you see, in these seven, every 7 years, they were to let the land lie fallow. And so every seventh year was a Sabbath, and seven times 7 years was a Sabbath, and a period of seven times 10 years was a Sabbath for the land. And then we have another period in Daniel 9, a seven times 70, 490 years, which had to do with a period on Israel, that Israel would be without a king, without a country, and so on. And then we have a seven times 1,000, that is, the 7,000th year, or the millennium. Now, those make a pattern, sevens all the way through, and those are all in connection with Israel, you see. You see, there weren't any of these numbers here had to do with us Gentiles. We do kind of come in the picture maybe later on, but I'll bring that out later. Not mentioned or anything of the kind, but we can see it there's a gap there in which the Gentile times would fill in. Now, we'll get into our reading here again, since I made a little introduction. Verse 3. Speak unto all the congregation. Kahal, and that word in the Septuagint is translated ekklesia, which is a Greek word, is translated church. So speak unto all the church of Israel, the assembly, whatever you want to call it, saying, in the 10th day of this month, they shall take to them every man a lamb, according to the house of fathers, a lamb for a house or household. And if the household be too little for the lamb, let him and his neighbor next unto his house take it, according to the number of the souls, or people. See, people are souls. Every man, according to his eating, shall make your account for the lamb. In other words, they were to have enough lamb that would be the size probably of a walnut, as some other fruit is mentioned, and there must not be too much lamb so they can't eat all of it. So they divide up the households for that. Now remember, at this Passover here, these directions are for one Passover only, and the one that they observed in Egypt, and the only one they ever did observe in Egypt. And so keep that in mind. This is the Egyptian Passover. Now, we have Passover celebrated after this, but not like this. Your lamb shall be without blemish, a male of the first year. Ye shall take it out from the sheep or from the goats. So it could either be a lamb or a kid. And without blemish, you know what that means. Mustn't be crippled or marred in any way. Perfect. And ye shall keep it up. Now, we farmers know what that means, to keep up some stalk. It means keep them shut up so that they can't go out and wander around. And ye shall keep it up until the 14th day of the same month. Now, let's see here. They're to pick it out at the first of the month. Or did they? It didn't say here, did it? There were some places where they were to keep it 4 days and look over it. Well, you shall keep it up until the 14th day of the same month, and the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it in the evening. Now, here is something you're going to run into. They kill the Passover, or they kill the lamb, or they killed a whole lot of lambs. But you see, this is an expression used here. It means all of them. And when you say kill the Passover, well, it didn't mean to kill the Passover observance. It meant kill what it stood for, the animal. And they shall take of the blood and strike it on the two side posts and on the upper door post of the houses, or we call it the lintel, wherein they shall eat it. Now you can imagine the entrance to the house. Evidently, Israel lived in houses in Goshen. In fact, they lived pretty well in Egypt. They had things pretty nice down there, about the best part of Egypt as far as land was concerned, because the Egyptians didn't keep herds and so on, and so they just let the Israelites have that. because they kept the flocks and herds. And so they were living fairly well, excepting that in the latter years there they'd been put into slavery, but still they had their homes and so on. And so this is the way they decorate the door on each side and above with blood. Just smeared it on. Now, as we read on in different places and so on, we will probably learn how that they put it on. They didn't use a paintbrush or their finger. But usually when they had something like that to do, they took a little weed called hyssop and take a little of that in their hand. And it was very porous, that is, it was something like our tumbleweed, and you get a bunch of it tight together, and it would hold a lot of liquid. And so all they had to do was said, strike it. Well, that's all they had to do, just give it one swat, and as we would say, and it would put a lot of blood on there. And so it could be seen plainly on the sides and above. Now remember, they didn't put any underneath on the threshold, because it was not to be trod underfoot. And it'd be certainly a sacrilege. So it wasn't trod underfoot. Now, there's something about treading the blood of Christ underfoot in Hebrews, you know. And they shall eat the flesh in that night, roast with fire and unleavened bread, and with bitter herbs they shall eat it. Notice it's to be roasted with fire. Eat not of it raw, nor eat any raw meat, nor sodden, that's boiled, at all with water, but roast with fire. His head, with his legs, and with the pertinence thereof. And ye shall let nothing of it remain until the morning. And that which remaineth of it until the morning ye shall burn with fire. Get rid of it, the morning. And thus shall ye eat, with your loins girded. That means all ready to go. Now, loins girded means that their loose garment they wore had a belt or something put around it. And so that they could move freely without the thing flopping around in their way. And so they were to be ready to go. Your shoes on your feet, and your staff in your hand. Now, I can picture that they ate that while standing. They didn't even sit down if they were like that, with their shoes all ready and their clothes ready to get right out and go. No doubt they just stood and ate that lamb. And you shall eat it in haste. Now, ordinarily, we tell people to eat slowly. But here is a command from the Lord to eat in haste. Now, that isn't good for one ordinarily. But this was a special occasion. This was something really out of the ordinary. And here, in the last part of the sentence here, verse 11, it is the Lord's Passover. The first time that the word Passover is used in the Bible. Well, we'll go on. That finishes one particular sort of a paragraph, or really two of them. The first two verses are separate, and then 3 to 11, and now 12 and 13 form a little paragraph. And the Lord is saying, "For I will pass through the land of Egypt this night." This night. Not tomorrow night, or not some other night, and so on, but he says this night. "And will smite all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast. And against all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgment. I am the Lord." Now we may have to explain a little bit there. How could he execute judgment against the gods of Egypt? Because that they firstborn of man and beast are to be killed. Now the firstborn of beasts were for worship of different idols, one beast for one kind of an idol, another beast for another, until they even got down to bugs and beetles, really. They had all kinds of gods, piles of them. And the firstborn, the first one male that the mother had, or mothered, was considered the sacred one. And so when all of the firstborn of both man and beast were killed in Egypt, it struck at all of their gods. Well, now, why would it, in the case of man? Well, for this reason, that the Egyptians had a belief that if all their gods did fail them, then they'd make a human sacrifice of the firstborn. And that would certainly do the work. Well, now you can see, after all the plagues that they had, and this death of the firstborn being the tenth one, that and the other, and the all of these being really against the gods of Egypt. Every one of them is connected with somehow with the gods of Egypt. God is showing to the Egyptians these plagues that He is all powerful and He is the God. Of course, you know they didn't believe it with all of that. And I might add here, while we're on the subject of plagues, that there was an 11th plague. And the Bible doesn't tell you much about that one. But just as soon as Israel were out of the land, the 11th plague came in and held that land for close to 500 years in subjection, absolute slavery, worse than what they'd ever done to the Israelites. And that, of course, was the Amalekites. And Israel met them and had a battle with them as they left. Now that, of course, it's been a long time. It's taken years before we could dig up enough history to find out some of the details about this and what did happen. And that was broken at the time of King Saul, when he and the Egyptians fought against the Amalekites and won, and King Saul disobeyed the Lord and kept the king alive and while the stalk and so on. You remember the incidents. Now, verse 13. And the blood, that is, on the doorposts and lintel, shall be to you for a token upon the houses where ye are. A token. A token is quite often a sign, a symbol, or something of that kind. Now, actually, the blood was a token for Jehovah, in your note. And it had been sprinkled on there in faith. And so that protected the folks that are within. Now, suppose that when that night was drawing on, they got dark, and one of the children would ask, well, Father, did you sprinkle the blood on the doorposts and so on? He would say, yes, child, we certainly did. And I don't know whether a child would be curious enough he'd want proof or not. Well, now, if it was really put on in faith, they could dwell in peace under the blood, couldn't they? But suppose they had some doubts. Well, it'd be just as bad to doubt that it was on there as to doubt it had had any power, really significance, you know. Now, we don't have any record that there was any such dissatisfaction, unbelief among Israel that night. They had seen enough of these plagues and so on the Egyptians, and their own preservation. They were getting to the place that they could believe the Lord. Well, that was one great fact anyhow. You see, the thing that Moses asked when he'd asked Pharaoh if the people might go out in the wilderness and worship was that not a hoof should be left behind. Not a person, not one of the animals, but they should take everything and go. And so the blood over these doors preserved everything, everybody, all the animals and everything that the Jews had. And the blood shall be to you for a token upon the house where ye are. And when I see the blood, Jehovah says, when I see the blood, I will pause over you, and the plague shall not be upon you to destroy you when I smite the land of Egypt. And we'll get more of that later on. I use the word pause there. And this day shall be unto you for a memorial. And you shall keep it a feast to the Lord throughout your generations. You shall keep it a feast by an ordinance forever. Well, now, they kept it that night. We find later on that they kept it once more a year after that in the wilderness. And then for 38 years they didn't observe it until they got in the land. And here's a command to keep it as an ordinance forever. So why didn't they keep it that 38 years? Well, that's another one of those things that happened. That 38 years really didn't count. They were forced to stay in the wilderness for 38 years because of their lack of belief in Kadesh Barnea. And there's another reason why that they couldn't keep it. Because none of the males were circumcised during that whole period that they were in the wilderness, the 40 years. And so there would be somebody in practically every household that couldn't partake of that Passover, even if they did try to. And I'll give you another reason. We'll go on here in a little bit and we'll find that they didn't have any food with them much when they went out. They took their flocks and their herds with them and so on. And they took unleavened dough. They hadn't even had time to leaven the dough. So they took their kneading troughs and the bread and they had to eat unleavened bread. In fact, there just isn't any record that they ate leavened bread from the time they left Egypt until they got into the land. They didn't have any bread except the manna, and they didn't leaven that. Just a lot of little items like that you have to stop and think about. But there were 38 years that they didn't observe the Passover, only observed it twice, and then missed out until they got into the land. Well, now, you see, they had gotten to the edge of the land in 2 years. And if they had gone in at Kadesh Barnea, they could have kept the third one right there and gone right on to their Passovers. But they didn't. Well, that's failure. Verse 15. 7 days shall ye eat unleavened bread. Now this is going past the Passover. The Passover is one day. These 7 days are 7 more days, making 8 days in all. So keep that in mind. Even the first day you should put it away, put away leaven out of your houses, for whosoever eateth leavened bread from the first day until the 7th day, that soul shall be cut off from Israel. Well, and you see, they didn't carry any leaven with them. Their dough was unleavened when they went out. It wasn't a little bit, they had to subsist on manna, and so they didn't get to use any leaven. And then the first day, there should be a holy convocation. And in the 7th day, there shall be a holy convocation to you. No manner of work shall be done in them, save that which every man must eat, and that only may be done of you. And you shall observe the feast of unleavened bread. In this selfsame day have I brought your armies out of the land of Egypt. Therefore shall you observe this day in your generations by an ordinance forever. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month at even, you shall eat unleavened bread until 1 20th day of the month at even. This is where the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread are being combined, you see, into the 8 days. 7 days shall there be no leaven found in your houses. For whosoever eateth that which is leavened, even that soul shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he be a stranger or born in the land. You know, this doesn't go very well with some of the traditions that we have. I've heard people get up in the pulpit and preach and say that leaven was a symbol of good, and that this leaven we have in the New Testament, that's the gospel going out and all through the world and getting people to believe and so on. Well, the word leaven occurs just 13 times in the New Testament, and it's always a symbol of evil. And the Lord told his disciples to beware the leaven of the Pharisees, that is, the teaching of the Pharisees. It was evil. Verse 20, ye shall eat nothing leavened in all your habitations. Nothing leavened. In all your habitations shall ye eat unleavened bread. Then Moses called for the elders of Israel and said unto them, draw out and take you a lamb according to your families, and kill the Passover. Now, I mentioned that a while ago, kill the Passover. Of course, that means the lamb. And you shall take a bunch of hyssop. Now, here is getting to the sprinkling. And dip it in the blood that is in the basin, and strike the lintel. Now, we have this, the right name on it this time. And the two side posts with the blood that is in the basin. And none of you shall go out the door of his house until the morning. For the Lord will pass through to smite the Egyptians. And when he seeth the blood upon the lintel on the two side posts, the Lord will pause over the door and will not suffer the destroyer to come into your houses. Now you see the reason for the pausing? It has the idea of a hen spreading out her wings and brooding over her chicks. And ye shall observe this thing for an ordinance to thee and thy sons forever. And it shall come to pass when ye be come to the land which the Lord will give you, according as he hath promised, that ye shall keep this service. Now notice, we're getting something here now in this. And it shall come to pass when ye be come to the land which the Lord will give you, according as he hath promised, that ye shall keep this service. Well, that excuses them for keeping it those 38 years in the wilderness, doesn't it? And it shall come to pass when your children shall say unto you, what mean ye by this service? That ye shall say, it is a sacrifice of the Lord's Passover, who passed over the houses of the children of Egypt, or paused over them, when he smote the Egyptians, and delivered our houses. And the people bowed the head and worshipped. And Moses gave them all of this. And the children of Israel went away and did, as the Lord had commanded Moses and Aaron, so did they. And it came to pass, at midnight, the Lord smote all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh that sat on his throne, unto the firstborn of the captive that was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of cattle. Now cattle is all their domestic animals. And Pharaoh rose up in the night, he and all his servants, and all the Egyptians. And there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a house where there was not one dead. I guess that would make them sit up and take notice, wouldn't it? They seem to can't excuse all the rest of the plagues that came on them, and even duplicated some of it, but only so far. But now here is something that they couldn't duplicate, and they wouldn't want to duplicate. Not this. This thing, not a house in all the land where there wasn't one dead. And he called for Moses and Aaron by night. He didn't wait till morning, and said, rise up, and get ye forth from among my people, both ye and the children of Israel, and go serve the Lord as ye have said. And also take your flocks and your herds, as ye have said, and be gone. Now, he had always temporized and tried to get them to compromise before, but now he's giving them the whole works, everything that they asked for. Then he ends it up with a little phrase, I just don't know exactly what he meant by it, and bless me also. Now, that is just one of the things in the Bible stuck in there that we really don't have any explanation for. And the Egyptians were urgent upon the people, that they might send them out of the land in haste, for they said, we be all dead men, or people. And the people, Israel, that's capitalized, took their dough before it was leavened, their kneading troughs being bound up in their clothes upon their shoulders. And the children of Israel did according to the word of Moses. And they borrowed of the Egyptians jewels of silver and jewels of gold and raiment. And the Lord gave the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, so that they lent unto them. The word lent is not very good there. They just pushed it on to them, gave it to them to get rid of them. So they just gave them everything that they had, practically. The Lord turned their hearts to that. I don't know. You know what they did with some of that jewelry? They made a golden calf out of it. It'd been better if they didn't have all that. And they spoiled the Egyptians. And the children of Israel journeyed from Ramesses to Succoth. Now, evidently, their gathering point was Rameses. And they went to Succoth, about 600,000 on foot, that were men, and this word is Geber, men who could bear arms, beside children, and of course women too. But if there are about 600,000, these men that could fight, we would say that there's probably 3 million people altogether then, with all the herds and so on besides. And not only that, but verse 38, and a mixed multitude went up also with them, and flocks and herds, even very much cattle. You always have some camp followers, and they can be an awful nuisance, and they were with Israel. They were some that helped Israel get dissatisfied and grumbled, groaned out in the wilderness when they should have been thankful for what all the blessings they had. But in every group you get into, you always find there's somebody that's, oh, we just say in plain old English, belly aching. They're always raising their servants. They're complaining about the management. They're complaining about the job and so on. Never satisfied with anything. They're camp followers. They're a nuisance. And they baked unleavened cakes of the dough which they brought forth out of Egypt, for it was not leavened, because they were thrust out of Egypt, and could not tarry, neither had they prepared for themselves any victual, that is, any eats. Well, now, there is the going out. Now, you see, a lot of tradition tells us that that very night they crossed the Red Sea. But here it doesn't say so. It says they gathered together at Rameses and then started the march and went to Succoth. Well, now, actually, when you look at your map, if you have a good old map of Egypt, you'll find that the march from Rameses to Succoth took them out of Egypt proper, which was really a narrow strip of land along the Nile River. However, the Succoth and others were under Egyptian domination rule, but not Egypt proper. Well, the crossing of the Red Sea was close to 80 miles from where they left Rameses, and so it probably took them a greater part of a week to get there and make the crossing of the Red Sea. And it may be that the day before they crossed was a Sabbath, and they rested that day, if you read the account closely. Of course, we went over that a long time ago when we went through some of these books of the Old Testament. And just refresh your mind on that. Now there's a little interpolation here, verses 40, 41, and 42. And verse 43, and the Lord said unto Moses and Aaron, this is the ordinance of the Passover. There shall no stranger eat thereof. Anybody that's a foreigner, anybody outside of Israel, should not eat of it. But every man's servant that is bought for money, when thou hast circumcised him, then shall he eat thereof. That is, a slave who's bought for money, he could eat thereof if he's circumcised and becomes one of the family. A foreigner and a hired servant, somebody that you hire who is outside and a foreigner, shall not eat thereof. He's outside. In one house shall it be eaten. Thou shalt not carry forth aught of the flesh abroad out of the house, neither shall you break a bone thereof. All the congregation of Israel shall keep it. And when a stranger so sojourn with thee, and will keep, or wants to keep the Passover to the Lord, let all his males be circumcised, and then let him come near and keep it. And he shall be as one that is born in the land, for no uncircumcised person shall eat thereof. Now that law has never been abrogated. Now how about Gentiles today pretending they're keeping the Passover? Uncircumcised aliens. Foolishness. They don't know what they don't know even what it is to start with. In one house shall it be eaten. Not in the church, not in the synagogue, not in the temple, but in one house. In a house, that is. The whole family should be in one house. And they're to stay in there till the feast is over. Not necessarily the morning as they were on that first one. This is really giving rules for it now, you see, when they get in the land, that's what we're getting at. And you shall not break a bone thereof. All the congregation, the church of Israel, shall keep it. And when a stranger shall sojourn with thee, and will keep the Passover to the Lord, the boy's males be circumcised, and then let him come near and keep it. And he shall be as one as born in the land, for no uncircumcised person shall eat thereof. I'm repeating that. Now, verse 49. One law shall be to him that is homeborn, and unto the stranger that sojourneth among you. In other words, he must be circumcised. One law to both of them. Thus did all the children of Israel, as the Lord commanded Moses and Aaron, so did they. And it came to pass, the selfsame day that the Lord did bring the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt by their armies, hosts, not particular armies. I don't know how well that they were trained, but it didn't take Moses very long to make a good army. See, Moses had been brought up in Egypt, and tradition tells us he was a commander-in-chief of the Egyptian army at one time. And he rejected the idea of being a king, being adopted son of the king's daughter, and so he left and took his place with his own people, Israel. Now that is all we have here in Exodus that I want to use. We might turn over to Numbers 9. This is a little repetition of some of what we'd have, but I want you to notice some points in it. See, that's going to be 9:1 to 14, so it's a little bit long here. We have a few minutes left yet. And the Lord spake unto Moses in the wilderness of Sinai. Now they've gotten out in the wilderness, you see. In the first month of the second year. So this is a year now after they had their first Passover. After they were come out of the land of Egypt, saying, let the children of Israel also keep the Passover at his appointed season. In the 14th day of this month, at even, ye shall keep it in his appointed season, according to all the rites of it, and according to all the ceremonies thereof shall ye keep it. And Moses spake unto the children of Israel that they should keep the Passover. And they kept the Passover on the 14th day of the first month, at even, in the wilderness of Sinai, according to all that the Lord commanded Moses, so did the children of Israel. I'm going to have to explain something else to you. When it says at even, that means afternoon in our language. Because it's 6 o'clock in the evening or sunset, and it didn't set at a widely range of time or wide range of time as it does here, but they're a little nearer the equator. That was the beginning of the new day. And so when it speaks about the even, that is the time from noon until sunset. That is when the sun starts to go down from the meridian. That's the even. Now in the midst of two evenings, that is the latter part and the first part, would be 3 o'clock. And that was when the lamb was to be killed. And that is the hour at which the Lord died on Calvary to fulfill the Passover. The very time that the Passover lamb was to be killed. You keep that in mind to help some confusion appearing too. Now, when it began to dawn toward the first day of the week, as we'll find in the New Testament, that was when the evening was coming to a close and getting almost sunset, and the new day was coming. The word dawn does not necessarily mean early morning light. It just means coming near. And so the first day of the week was dawning, is coming to it, at about 6 o'clock in the evening. Our Lord was raised from the dead on Saturday, the Sabbath, just before evening sunset. So he was in the grave 3 days and three nights, because he was buried at sunset on Wednesday evening. Keep that all in mind. Because there's a lot of tradition has spoiled the truth. Verse 6. And there were certain men who were defiled by the dead body of a man, that they could not keep the Passover on that day. And they came before Moses and before Aaron on that day. Now, we don't know who these were. I don't think that these are the men who buried Nadab and Abihu, because it's a little too early for that. I don't think the tabernacle had been set up yet, the offering set up. And that would make it impossible, because they brought strange fire, you see, to the altar. Whoever they were, they buried somebody. And, of course, to touch a dead soul, according to the Levitical law, made them unclean. And so they couldn't keep the Passover because they were unclean. And these men said unto him, "We are defiled by the dead body of a man. Wherefore are we kept back, that we may not offer an offering of the Lord in his appointed season among the children of Israel?" And Moses said unto them, "Stand still, and I will hear what the Lord will command concerning you." And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, "Speak unto the children of Israel, saying, If any man of you or of your posterity shall be unclean by reason of a dead body, or be in a journey afar off, that he shall keep the Passover unto the Lord. The 14th day of the second month, at even, they shall keep it, and eat it with unleavened bread and bitter herbs." I want to check myself here. So that was a provision made for those who would have to skip the Passover for some reason or other. I think I have another verse or two here. "They shall leave none of it until the morning, nor break any bone of it. According to all the ordinances of the Passover, they shall keep it." This is if it was a regular Passover, but a month late. "But the man that is clean, and is not in a journey, and forbears to keep the Passover, even the same," just going to be neglectful, you see, the same soul shall be called from among his people, because he brought not the offering of the Lord in his appointed season. That man shall bear his sin." And again repeats here in verse 14 something said over and over. "And if a stranger shall sojourn among you," that is, be living among you, "and will keep the Passover, wishes to keep it unto the Lord, according to the ordinance of the Passover, and according to the manner thereof, so shall he do. He shall have one ordinance, both for the stranger and for him that is born in the land." In other words, you have to be circumcised and become a Jew. That is the only way you can keep it. And so far as I know, if anyone wanted to keep it today, which they can't do, and we'll sometime later have to tell you why, it's impossible to keep the Passover today. Or how are you guessing? Well, there's a good reason. Well, I might have another reference here. We might just start taking a look at Deuteronomy 16. Won't have very much time to start that. Deuteronomy 16, 1. "Observe the month of Abib, or Nisan, and keep the Passover unto the Lord thy God. For in the month of Abib, the Lord thy God brought thee forth out of Egypt by night." Now, Deuteronomy, as he was written sometime after the Exodus from Egypt. "Thou shalt therefore sacrifice a Passover unto the Lord thy God of the flock and the herd in the place which the Lord shall choose to place his name there." All right, there is the crux of the matter. From the time that they left Egypt, and their keeping of the Passover in the second year, from then on, there was to be a place. And God designated a place where the Passover lamb was to be sacrificed. Now, there's no place today designated, whatever, for the sacrifice of the lamb, which is the basis, absolute basis of the Passover. For finally, the designated place was the temple in Jerusalem. And there's no temple there, and there's a heathen mosque on the spot that God had designated for the Passover. Israel were scattered abroad, their temple burned, and their city destroyed, and so they cannot possibly keep the Passover today. Well, I must stop there.